Buddham Dhammam Sangham Namassami.
It's a good time for us to dedicate our practice to anybody we know who's sick, suffering, and needing love. The Buddha, who's an excellent teacher, really understood how minds work and wanted us to reflect on the fact that our practice shouldn't be dependent on conditions. Of course, it's skillful to go on retreat and have supportive conditions and a certain amount of that in the right context is good, as long as it's not something we're relying on, because as is clear in the teaching here, we can spend our lives going on retreat, enjoying going on retreat, having really quite controlled conditions probably. They don't necessarily feel controlled when things are too noisy for us or somebody is doing something we don't like, because the mind can get noisy, but really things can get very controlled when we're on retreat. And it's good for us to experience that, because the world can be really very overwhelming, as we know, and we have to have a starting point. But a healthy mind will manage to maintain inner balance independent of outside conditions. And this is good to contemplate, not to judge ourselves and whip ourselves up into feeling inadequate because we get very flawed, overwhelmed, discouraged, depressed by the state of the world. And on the other side, we can also get very swept up by the joys of the world, the worldly pleasures and the attachments of family and friends. And it's not to dismiss all these things as unwholesome, it's simply our attitude to us and the degree to which we do them. We keep precepts because we have to have some frame around us, we have to have some holding. Those of us who are lucky enough to be living in a monastic setting have really quite an extreme degree in some ways. So this is not a control of our minds, because the understanding of the mind and the training of the mind is an individual project that we undertake. But in externals, we can have really quite a strong framework in a monastery. And of course, that's very different for most lay people. And that can make life very difficult to balance. So it's good to reflect on this, because we can divide our experience sometimes in quite strict ways. So this is good, this is bad. This is me being good, this is me being bad. This is me being restrained, this is me being unrestrained. And so we can get caught up, identified, depressed, guilty, or swept away by pleasures of the body, pleasures of the mind. And as I said, these things can be fine in moderation. The mind needs some pleasure. But the practice is to gradually learn to turn to finer forms of pleasure. So once the mind learns to settle and retreat inwardly from some of the coarseness of the world, to restrain not through harshness, not through wishes to control ourselves and others, but simply out of love. And this is easier for some people than others. It can take quite a while for the mind to even want to settle. The mind can be very agitated. The beauty of this practice that we pick up is that it's an investigative practice. So it's like a big experiment. And there's some quite firm moral guidelines. If we can't really be loving and teach ourselves to be loving to ourselves, then it's very hard for us to turn further towards what is beneficial. So in the early stages of practice, we really need to find a gentle starting place. So a lot of people are not going to necessarily be jet propelled into practice. We all need to be inspired. It's beautiful to hear words about reality, the infinity of universal love, the lack of separation between us. When we really understand reality, to get a taste of what it might be like not to be cut off from other people and from the goodness inside ourselves. And actually, really the whole practice is to find the goodness inside ourselves. Then there will be no separation. So that sounds like a beautiful idea, but then we're in the world and we have habits and patterns. The mind can be very, very stubborn. And we can see ourselves getting enmeshed in attachments, things we'd like to drop but we can't. We feel like we don't have the willpower, the self-control, and we can really be harsh on ourselves. So the investigation involves, wherever we are in the practice, really just seeing what's coming up in the mind. And even right now, listening to a teaching, when we're meditating, being in this retreat space together, things will come up for us. And we may have all these ideas about how it should be. I should be relaxed. I should be having a good practice. I have ideas about what that means. When I hear the teachings, I should take them in, and then I'll become a loving person. I'll gradually suffer less. I won't have to suffer when I die. The people around me won't have to suffer. All these ideas that we may have about how we should be, and some of them may be very unconscious. So we may feel like we're very realistic and not idealistic, and we don't have expectations. But underneath that, we can be very much like children, reaching out for nourishment, for comfort, for love. We can be very, very lost. When we're hearing the teachings on impermanence, they sound so beautiful. If we truly understand impermanence, then we'll wake up. So what does it really mean to understand impermanence? We can look at a clock. We can feel the passing of time. We can look back and know that mind states we had yesterday, last week, a year ago, maybe when something terrible happened, maybe when something wonderful happened, that these came and they went. But right now, or when we have to face a difficult situation at work or with our family, in the heat of that, how easy is it to understand impermanence? When night falls and we're on our own and something is frightening us, we're afraid. And we say to ourselves, this is impermanent. When we feel depressed and someone says to us, this is impermanent, does it feel impermanent? It's good to challenge ourselves and not believe things that we haven't seen yet. If we have a negative emotion and it feels hot and hard, and in that moment we feel like we've felt it our whole lives, that maybe our parents told us we were that kind of person, and we believe it, we believe that that's who we are, and that's who we always will be. And tomorrow we may not believe it, but right now, perhaps we do believe it. So these big emotions, these habits which seem so strong, if we're up close to them, it can be a bit like we're trying to see a mountain and our face is shoved right in the mountain. So our nose is right in the dirt of the mountain. If we try and breathe in, we're breathing the dust of the mountain. If we reach out our hands, all we can feel is the extent of the mountain. The mountain could be everything. If we were a child looking at that, we might just think that's everything. There's nothing else. There's just this wall. If we're able to stand back even a couple of steps, we can see that we don't have to breathe in the dust of the mountain. We don't have to touch the mountain. If we walk back further and further, we might be able to look up and see the top of the mountain, the sides of the mountain. If we walk back and back and back, the mountain can become really quite small. And if we were taken into outer space, the mountain would become maybe a little dot and then disappear. And then we would just see the cool, glassy surface of the earth in the peaceful space. We would have perspective, and we would be able to see that what we perceived as everything, as our whole world, was insignificant. So, in the heat of the moment, with these emotions, with these habits, with this grasping what we perceive as good and what we perceive as difficult, frightening, intense, overwhelming, how do we take a step back? The Buddha encouraged us to strengthen the mind by finding things which are possible to contemplate without stressing ourselves out. We don't have to keep looking at things we're not quite ready to look at yet, and giving ourselves a really hard time for not being advanced practitioners. So, what's easy to contemplate and see the change in? For a lot of people, going out into nature and seeing the natural world and seeing how things change over time, feeling the grass under our feet, smelling the scents of nature, seeing how animal life changes. We see that a lot in the Hermitage. We're very, very blessed. At this time of year, the baby deer are born, and so the pregnant mothers are very close in to us right now. They want to have that safe feeling of being away from predators, and the mother deer will introduce the babies to us so that the babies aren't afraid of us, and mothers can leave them around the buildings while they go off in search of food. And all the plants are shooting forth. Everything is lush. But over time this will change. Things may dry out over the summer. The baby deer will grow. These things may seem like so what, but they have a powerful effect on us. If we contemplate them, Don't discount them. They're gentle, potent ways of being with impermanence. More directly in our practice, we can be with the living breath in our own bodies, which can be pleasurable, can be difficult to be with sometimes, but is often quite a neutral, safe experience. So it's good to contemplate calming, close to home, non-threatening things before we expect ourselves to face up to the big guns, the very, very difficult things. And in strengthening ourselves, we are actually doing more than may seem apparent. Every little step to gently move into accepting that things change will help our whole lives, because it may be harder than we think to face up to change. The bottom line is, it may be quite frightening to really face up to impermanence. And that seems important to understand, because if that wasn't the case, we wouldn't need to practice so much. So to face up to the enormity of this task, the depth of this task, and the profundity of this task is a big gift to ourselves. And I want to share with you a very lovely question we were given. I sort of understand a muted, subtle sense of love. I have the ability to give compassion to self, others, enemies, etc. For the most part, love doesn't land, and I don't have any understanding. Question: how to reconnect with love? As someone who didn't grow up with much love around and shut off their emotions. I found this question very moving, because it feels like we're all trying to reconnect with love. If we didn't start in a very nourishing environment, maybe our family didn't feel like what we think of as a loving family, it can feel like we're starting at a big disadvantage. And certainly some people will grow up feeling very loved. But we all have to realize the limitations of whatever love we receive from other people. Yes, some people grow up with huge challenges, but there is much to be gained, because suffering is our teacher, and to even understand that inner void, even understand the motivation for searching for something that we can rely on, something that is going to take away the feeling of inadequacy. So these are perceptions that we have. We can have this feeling that there is a love out there and I'm lacking love. And this can be quite an identity for us. I'm a person who lacks love, and I need to connect with love. And we can get quite stuck in that, because the mind will keep coming back to that. So letting ourselves gently fall into a more wholesome, accepting way of living. We're learning to connect with love through understanding what is here right now. So here we are together. Something has brought us here together. So what is there in this room right now? We may feel a level of trust, of wholeness, of peace. To be in this space with people who want the very best for themselves and for everybody. And when we breathe, perhaps we can breathe that in, that gift that we're giving each other by being here today. This is love. And it's actually okay if we can't feel that too, because we notice that. We notice. Not ready. And we can have compassion for not ready. Just because we're not ready doesn't mean it's not there. And if there's worry, wanting, we can have compassion for that too. Our progress or perceived progress in the practice may happen at such a rate that it's actually not perceptible on a day-by-day basis. I remember somebody once asked the Dalai Lama, "Have you noticed a change in your practice and your life over the years?" And he said, "Over 5 years? Not really. Over 10 years? A little. Over 20 years? Yes." So, reflecting, when are we practicing? Are we dropping the practice sometimes? Are we having times of practice and times where we feel like we can let it go, or we just feel too awful to practice, or we've got too much going on, or we feel too good to practice, we just feel like we can't calm down maybe. The encouragement is to bring patience and acceptance into all parts of our life. This is from the Dhammapada, from a chapter called Oneself. "Oneself indeed is one's own protector. What other protector could there be? With self-control, one gains a protector, hard to obtain. If one knew oneself to be precious, one would guard oneself with care. The sage would watch over themselves in any part of the night." Can we know ourselves to be precious and guard ourselves with care? If these things were easy and we could come up with a technique to disidentify, to relax into awareness, to step back from the mountain of our ego, which we're so attached to, it would be a wonderful thing. I find it good to reflect on how very afraid we can be to step back from these things, which seems so difficult sometimes and so harmful to ourselves or others. addictions and angers and fears of life. And even the things which we find most hard to bear about ourselves and the world, strangely enough, we can cling to them like a drowning person clinging to a raft. We think, I'm a person who wants to get rid of these things. Why can't I get rid of them? Why can't I kick this habit? And it's good to be humble and to face up to the fact that we don't understand the world, we don't understand ourselves. And we have to relearn an intuitive way of knowing, which may involve some pain. To study suffering can be painful. So we don't necessarily really want to do it. We like the idea because, you know, we're told there's freedom at the end of it. But just have the courage and the compassion we have to have for ourselves and actually for others too to do this work. And to know the reality that we were scared to face up to. But eventually the heart will learn patience, trust, faith, and with good spiritual companionship, never giving up. These things are useful.